Scariest Things Podcast, your gateway to the trends and tropes of the horror genre, episode 68. I'm your host, Eric Lee, and I'm with
Mike Campbell
and
Liz Williams
from
New Orleans.
It is. What, how hot is it down in New Orleans right now, Liz?
We're recording at about 9 o'clock at night my time, and it's 89 degrees. So it's a respite from our 100 degree day.
It is
like 108. It's terrible.
It's about 72 and sort of partly sunny in Portland. It's been fabulous all week.
All right, good thing about our weather is that there's really nothing else to do except stay inside or stay in the movie theater
and
just binge. So
there you go.
It's great for movie fans.
I was wondering when we were going to get to the transitional segue to horror.
Yeah.
Because weather is not inherently scary.
Nope.
No, New Orleans
when it's
weather.
100 degrees in the day, you know, yeah.
I'm afraid of the flop sweats.
So. Weather
with
horror.
The, heat index at like 108, and we get those warnings on our phone that's about air quality, then you know it's bad.
Yeah. But we're not talking about weather today. Today
nope.
We're doing a...
and that is not a subgenre of horror, weather horror.
There's a couple that I could point to, but we'll get to that in another day.
Okay,
because
all right. That's a challenge.
Mr. Campbell has put us on the clock. we're going to try and be kind of brisk today. So
yes.
This is a Patreon...
Request.
Request for Brian Gilson... And his
of Brian and Sarah fame.
Brian and Sarah, who have a little company called Unsettling Toys, which they rehome or they will rescue toys that are too creepy for your house and find someone else who might want a creepy doll or a creepy stuffed animal. And we encourage you to take a look at Brian's website. We have it posted on scariestthings.com.
And follow them on Instagram as well, Unsettling Toys.
So, Brian, this one's for you. This is Killer Toys.
Killer Toys and Dolls. Evil Dolls.
And
Killer Toys.
It's a bit of a trick, this one.
Oh my gosh, is it ever.
Because a lot of them are going to seem kind of familiar. Now, there are some very, very familiar ones. And we'll see if we hit on these because, for me... Killer Dolls was a bit of a stretch trying to find ones that I really liked.
Mm-hmm,
well,
I agree.
Yes, there's, which is not to say there's not lots of killer doll, killer toy type films, but yeah, finding the ones that you like and actually resonate with you, that's the trick. Because I found, Couchmares, aka Kathy's Curse, Doll Man versus Demonic Toys, Puppet Master 4, Puppet Master 5, The Final Chapter, Curtains, The Black Devil Doll from Hell, The Devil's Gift, Joey, Pinocchio's Revenge, Merlin's Shop
Pinocchio's
of Mystical
Revenge.
Wonders.
Wait, okay, now I hope.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I found was, and I guess the interesting part of this, as we often get into this when we're looking at sub-genres of horror, is that you think there's nothing out there, but a couple little clickety-doos on the internet, and you... unearth this wealth of crap.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that I enjoy when I'm doing dead lists is, you know, uncovering, you know, it got, because I recently I've done two big dead lists. I did the Memorial Day honoring the vets, and I did Pride Month honoring the LGBT community. And it was pretty easy to fill it up, and you had to all of a sudden really go through there and cull out some really good movies. This one, we're going to have to do a little bit of deep diving.
Yeah.
And I think
because you know what the other thing I found, and I don't know about you, Liz, was that there was a lot of films that have like a doll type element or a toy element in the film that turns out to be creepy. I think of, you know, I think of the, well, Poltergeist, obviously, yep. with the spooky clown.
You busted me.
We'll get to you.
Yes, we'll get there. But then I also think of like the George C. Scott film. The Changeling. The Changeling. Thank you. And it's not what you would think of when you think of, you know, toys, demonic dolls. It's a ball, a rubber ball. Right. And who thought a red rubber ball could be terrifying? But turns out red rubber balls are terrifying.
George C. Scott can just make anything terrifying.
That's true.
Would you consider something like a tricycle scary? I'm thinking The Omen, which is actually being ridden by a demonic child.
Yes. Yeah, well, so I don't know.
Rocking horses, rocking chairs. I mean, there's a whole set, sort of another genre, which is inanimate things, not necessarily toys.
Right.
That become creepy. Things like rubber.
Toys, not dolls.
Tires. Toys.
Yes.
Yeah. For those of you who aren't aware of rubber, it is Mondo Bizarro.
Yes. You didn't put that on your list.
No, it's not a toy. Although you could have a tire swing. If it ever acted as a tire swing, I might have thought about including it, ooh, but it didn't.
Rubber 2, the swinging.
All right. Mark it down.
Yes.
Mike, that's a...
Rubber 2. That is ours. Don't touch it.
That's right. So let's go with Mike first.
God. All right. Well, I'm going to go right to the top of the list. And this is, I think, probably a film that appears on many of the top doll lists. Well, I know it appears on many of the top doll lists because I looked at many of the evil doll, evil toy lists. And this is the 1978 film featuring Anthony Hopkins and Margaret Burgess Meredith and directed by Sir Richard Attenborough. This is magic.
With fats.
Fats and Corky. Corky, of course, is the Charles Corky Withers, a.k.a. Anthony Hopkins. He plays sort of a washed up comedian magician who is having an awful difficult time with his career. His career has kind of stalled out. He is given a ventriloquist dummy that he uses with much aplomb. His mentor, a guy named Merlin, says that he needs, you know, sort of he needs a better gimmick for his act. And so he uses this as a way to both enhance his act, but then also sort of hide these very strange psychological scars that he has. And lo and behold, he becomes, you know, a Corky alongside of his foul-mouthed dummy, Fats. He becomes a huge overnight success. He's doing The Tonight Show. He's doing, you know, he's doing Carnegie Hall. He's doing it all.
There's a Faustian deal here. Then.
There is sort of a Faustian deal. And the interesting part of it is that he, you know, his agent, his very powerful showbiz agent, played by Burgess Meredith, Ben Green, is on the verge, just on the cusp of taking his stardom to superstardom. But the TV network says if we're going to sign this guy onto a show, he's got to take a medical exam first. And Corky says, hell no, because he knows in his heart of hearts that if he goes and does the medical exam, it's going to unearth all of these weird psychoses that he has. And so he beats feet, heads back to his old hometown where he encounters his lady friend, and Marg Rock, and Anne she's never left the town, and he had always had a crush on her. Obviously, Corky uses Fats sort of as a both a direct manifestation of his psychoses, but also uses Fats to kill, and kill.
Okay, now I will admit I haven't seen Magic.
Oh, really?
Me neither.
Okay. Yes.
So, I mean, how does he manage to kill? Kill with Fats.
Well, I'm not.
I mean, without spoil.
I'm not gonna say. Okay. I'm not going to say. You have to watch the film.
See the movie.
This is the thing I did not know about the film. What I thought was really interesting when I was researching this, because I did watch it just recently. Okay. The first choice of director was Norman Jewison. And Jewison apparently wanted Jack Nicholson. But Steven Spielberg was also interested. But Steven Spielberg wanted Robert De Niro for the role.
So Hall of Fame.
Richard Attenborough had just made A Bridge Too Far. And so basically Richard Attenborough was like, I think we should try to get Laurence Olivier for the role.
Holy shit.
Of Burgess Meredith. Yeah. Oh. So it was literally like, This was really the hot property of the time.
So this is like a blacklist script then. This must have been like something that the directors were fighting over.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The thing that's great about the film is Corky is very creepy. And Anthony Hopkins, pre-Hannibal Lecter, is also very creepy. And he is able to really work the two things together in, I think, pretty magical way, in a really interesting way that makes it very scary. But the thing that is my favorite about the film is the tagline to Magic's 1970.
Hold on to that tagline.
Hold on to it.
Okay. Hold on to it. Hold on to it.
Till the end. Till the very end.
That'll be our closer.
Okay. I will hold on to it.
All right. Because I didn't write down a closer.
This is the ultimate closer.
Okay.
All right.
You have the close then.
All right. So that is, yes, 1978's Magic is a really good film. It's very interesting and it is star-packed. And it actually ends in a way, and I'm not going to spoil the end, but it ends in a way that there could have been a Magic 2. The magic in name.
It's probably just as well that we had one.
Yes. One magic is fine. All right, Liz, what do you got for your number one?
Or number three?
Well,
number three, yes. Number three.
So I skimmed the surface on this one, guys. I don't personally care for creepy dolls or toys, so I usually stay away from them. So, as you already mentioned, I pick Poltergeist.
It's hard not to.
I mean, we're going back to 1982. Steven Spielberg, Toby Hooper, Poltergeist. So
Steven Spielberg did this because he couldn't get Magic.
This is idea and screenplay. Yeah, probably. He was so mad about Magic that he was like, we need a doll after the TV, the pool, the tree, the meat, peeling off faces. What can we do next? Oh, I know. Let's put a almost life-size clown doll in these kids' room. And the thing that I always forgot about the clown is that it happens at the end of the movie.
Yep.
They have pulled Carol Ann through the closet. Everybody thinks they're safe. Oh, no. They're packing up to leave. They're going to sleep their last night in the house. But what did they not pack? The doll. That's the clown. So he's sitting in the chair looking at Robbie's bed and him and Carol Ann's bedroom. And, of course, you hear the, you know, tinkling of the bells on his little jester's hat. You look away. You turn back. He's not there anymore. Where is he? Of course he's under the bed.
Under the bed.
And he's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, and he uses his weird little clown arm and wraps it around Rami's neck and pulls him under the bed. So it's, what you're saying, creepy doll or toy, there is nothing else that I will ever think of besides that clown.
Oh, when I was 13 or however old I was when I saw that was a visceral, you know, that is the classic, there's a monster under my bed move.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, this goes to very much into Brian Gilson's expertise, which is that clown was creepy as shit sitting on the shelf.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know who finds, you know, and that's the whole thing. It's like, all right, we could do a whole show about clown horror also. But clown puppets, man, that's a double dipper.
Clown horror.
It is.
Weather horror.
Right.
Those are coming to you very soon.
Coming soon.
Clown horror,
I know
weather
that's
horror.
The basic surface, but I think it also might be, is it number three? Is it number one? I don't know. Is it the, you know, pinnacle of creepy doll and toy because it's just perfect?
And it's like 7 feet tall, or it becomes 7 feet tall. Yeah.
It becomes large.
No, to Eric's point, though, I think it might be the best depiction of there's a monster under my bed in all of film history.
Yep.
Well, and I did rewatch Poltergeist because I love it and I'll take any excuse I can. And it still holds up and it's still terrifying. I don't care, you know, kids of any age,
And
shame
I,
on you, parents, for even purchasing that doll. Whoever makes these things, you know?
Like, for all the greatness that we get from the family dynamic, it's like, the hell are you doing buying that?
Yeah, I know. They seemed like cool parents, but I guess not, huh? So that's it. Poltergeist.
They were precursors to the Insane Clown Posse.
Oh gosh!
Prototypical Juggalo parents.
I am fascinated with
Juggalos. I am too fascinated with Juggalos, and I would be willing to bet, in addition to clown horror and weather horror, I would be willing to bet if we did a little bit of research, we could find an entire subgenre of Juggalo horror.
We probably could. I don't think we want to go there.
No, yeah. I don't think so either. That's a dark dive.
You can do that one by yourself.
Solo podcast.
So,
all right. Number three for Eric on his terrible trio.
So this one is one that you and I just saw.
What?
When
did we just see this?
This is a hysterical new horror comedy short film that was shown at the Portland Horror Film Festival.
In June, yeah. Heck yeah.
This is a little film called Finley, directed by J. Zachary Thurman. And this film won the Audience Choice Award for the Best in Show.
Right.
Oh, awesome.
Overall, beat 42 other short films and 6 feature films. It beat all 6 of the feature films that were at this thing. And this was a good year for their short films and great year for their horror comedies. And this one was
hysterical. It brought the house down.
Fantastic. I think that the premise here, this is taking a marionette doll similar to Fats from Magic. That's Finley.
Right.
Now Finley has been locked in a case in the attic in a rental home.
Not just locked. He is chained up and nailed down in a wooden box.
And
that's what you should do with marionette dolls. That's
100%.
Yeah.
And so then what do? You inject the house with some stupid college students. You have Jennifer, who is Alexa Lee Fletcher, Chris, Keith Dowsett, and Alexandra, Brooke Wallace, and they are renting this home. And when they explore the attic, they find the box and they go, huh, let's open this box up, which clearly has warning signs, red flags, and, sort of horn strobes on the side of this thing saying, don't touch it. And so the obvious thing that as soon as they open it up and they see this,
they gotta touch it, then.
This grinning marionette, is you go, oh, here we go. This is going to be like, this is the Chucky kind of moment where it's going to be the most evil thing ever. And he is, except for he's inept. Right? And it takes all the tropes and it turns it on its head, because he does things like he sets up a trap full of nails and he screws that up. He does a trap with the toaster in the tub and he screws that up.
He befriends the cat.
Yeah. And and so every time he does the students, they don't.
It's always it's always followed by a, aw, Finley.
and he only has one expression, and that's just a gape and smile. But you feel bad for the little guy because he's trying so hard to be evil and he just can't succeed at it. At a certain point, because early on you go, why are you letting this thing run, this animated creepy doll run around the house? But they find him kind of amusing.
Right.
Well, and
it becomes kind of a two-act play.
Oh yeah, no. But in order not to spoil it.
Yeah, I will not spoil it is a two-act play.
The second act is redemption for Finley. Finley finally
redemption against Finley, redemption for Finley. Yes.
Right. And done in a heartwarming and brutal way.
Yes.
Finley finally gets his, and it's completely enjoyable. It brought the house down. This was,
and it runs at like 11 minutes, 12 minutes.
Oh,
maybe.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So kudos.
And it is not available.
No. Now here's the thing.
All right. We're talking about films you should see, you cannot see. Yeah.
So, you have to take Eric and Mike's word for it. Yeah. I'm not even with them, guys. I don't know what they're...
So what I would do is wait about a year.
Yeah. keep Finley parked in the back of your mind.
Awesome. What happens is short films that do the horror film circuit often can't go streaming because then... The festival says, well, what benefit is it to us to show your film if you're going to have it streaming? And this is the best way for them to get promoted and to get noticed by the rest of the larger film community. And so they usually do the full circuit for a year. And in some cases, the festivals want to own the rights so that they can package it up in a DVD. So there's a high likelihood that this will be ending up on a DVD from Portland Horror Film Festival. So you can check that out from Gwen and Brian.
Get online.
In a few months, they will have the best of the 2019 Portland Horror Film Festival. And if you want to get a full read of what we enjoyed at that festival, we have a big post on thescariestthings.com.
Yes.
Awesome.
One T.
All right, Mike, you're two.
Number two, I'm going with a 1987 Italian-American dark fantasy horror film called, appropriately enough, Dolls.
Oh.
Yeah, this Dolls I kind of knew about only because of the VHS box that I have seen a million gazillion times as I've been strolling through. It's the doll, or this sort of human doll-like character on the cover of the VHS tape box that has pulled their eyes out and are holding their eyeballs on either side of their head off to the side. And it's always been something I've said to myself, I need to investigate this film a little bit further. And I finally did. And this is a film directed by Stuart Gordon, but it was produced by...
Oh, cool.
But it was produced by Charles Band of...
Yeah, Castle Freak.
Of Castle Freak. Stuart Gordon of Castle Freak fame, Charles Band
of... Producer of Castle Freak. He is actually the executive producer and owner of Full Moon.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. So yeah, he comes to us from Full Moon fame, and it's a really, you know, it's a super silly film that is sort of the pure embodiment of kind of where films were at in 1987. If you took a snapshot of a film and said, what does a horror film from 1987 look like? Boom, this would be it. It's kind of goofy. There's some interesting elements of sort of like yuppies versus punk rockers in kind of there's this like great sort of class war undertone.
Return of the Living Dead.
Return of the Living Dead kind of a story, but it's essentially this yuppie family, their car breaks down, they find a nearby mansion. It happens to be inhabited by an older couple, Gabriel and Hillary Hartwick. Gabriel is a master doll maker. And then shortly after they decide to take in this yuppie family, the punk rockers arrive and all hell breaks loose. And of course, as each of their worst character elements, the yuppies and the punk rockers, as their worst character elements start to unwind, they use the dolls become sort of a manifestation of.
So they're like almost totemic.
They're somewhat totemic, or they're related, but you know that's
a college word for
dolls.
Yes.
it's not entirely, but yeah, it is somewhat totemic, but it's basically a revenge film, and it's a revenge on bad character, bad taste, bad human characteristics and qualities. And of course, in the middle of all of this is the little girl, the yuppies little girl, who is very childlike and innocent. And so there's these teachable moments about wanting to make sure that you always maintain these childlike and innocent qualities as you're going through life. And you should always have toys. Eric heard this message loud and clear. You should always have toys, and you should always have a childlike innocence available to you at any given point in time. That said, there are some hella gnarly killings in this film. Yeah. There is some really crazy stuff a la Charles Band, a la Puppet Master, a la Full Moon Productions. There is some really, really grisly stuff, including, you know, for once, which is, this is very, very rarely the case, does the VHS cover come to life. But in this case, it actually comes to life. Nice. And literally that scene in the film is the VHS box.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a great little film. It's very silly.
You mean the VHS box is in the movie?
The VHS box isn't in the movie, but the image within the VHS, or the image on the VHS box, is part of the film. Yeah. So fun little movie, 1987. If you're pining for Days of Yore, or you're looking for that 1987 horror film, Dolls is a pretty good one, and it's certainly a good one to start with in the evil doll, evil toy subgenre.
Yeah, for those of you who are not aware of Stuart Gordon's provenance, Reanimator from Beyond.
Yep.
Castle Freak.
Yep.
Yeah. So he is. That's what you're getting into. It's some of the classics of 80s schlock.
Mm-hmm.
The king of the straight to VHS horror.
So. Yep.
Yep.
Liz, you're number two.
Okay, I'm coming a little bit out of the 80s to 2016, and I feel like I'm going to take shit for this choice, but I really like this movie, and it is William Brent Bell's The Boy.
Oh, no. Okay, I'll let you go.
Walking Dead. I like this movie. I don't know if I was just, maybe it was hot, maybe it came out in the summer, but I didn't see this ending coming. So.
Oh yeah, no, it is the ending is, it's a surprise.
It's creepy.
I have not seen The Boy. So
what? Okay, well then I will.
So I have no opinion.
Spoil the ending, but it stars Lauren Cohen, who is from The Walking Dead.
Maggie.
Maggie from The Walking Dead. I couldn't remember her name because I stopped watching that. she's an American like college student or right out of college who takes a job in England to be a nanny to a boy named Brahms. Turns out when she gets there, it's this elderly couple, and their son Brahms is not a human boy. He is a doll with like a creepy porcelain face, and he's probably about the size of a 2-year-old. So he's not, you know, huge, but he's creepy. So they're going on vacation. So she needs to stay in their like country manor alone with Brahms and treat him like a real person, you know, like make dinner, put him to bed, change his clothes, do all this stuff. So she's like, okay, this is probably going to be the easiest job ever. They're kind of creepy when they leave, you know, saying goodbye and looking kind of forlorn, leaving her in the house. But she's also escaping an abusive ex-boyfriend. So this is the perfect way for her to hide out. And there's also a grocery delivery boy who's quite handsome. So, of course, a little romance is going to ensue.
Love triangle.
Love triangle.
I was going to say trifecta.
Yeah.
Yep. So, as with any horror movie, especially when it's a young girl alone in a British estate in the countryside, you know, rapping on the walls, Brahms was in one room and now he's in the other. Is this doll really moving? So she goes through the, you know, horror tropes of, I'm going to do a chalk outline. I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, do different things to see if he moves and bring. So it's, I don't know why I like it so much. It's not a good, I mean, it's not a great movie. It's not breaking any boundaries, but it hits all the notes that you want it to hit. Of course, the abusive boyfriend's going to find her. You know, of course he's going to show up there when she's, you know, having like kind of a date night with the British grocery guy. And of course, Brahms, the doll, is going to cause some hijinks. I'm not going to go any further than that because if you haven't seen it, a la Finley, I think that it's a pretty good movie. So if you are somewhere hot like New Orleans and you don't want to leave, you want to stay in your air conditioning. This is a good one to stream.
Crank
until,
up the boy.
Yeah. It is one of these movies. It kind of reminds me of The Forest, which came out also featuring a fairly name actress or a young star actress.
I didn't see that. That was the girl from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Right.
Who played Terrell, the
yeah.
But what you get is you get very good production values. This is
It looks great.
It's a studio film, so it has it's PG-13, so it comes at you with spooks and jump scares and stuff. It's not a really visceral film, but once you figure out what Brahms' secret is, it's pretty jarring.
Yeah,
and I thought
it was pretty good, and I didn't see it coming, and it was a popcorn flick and a great, you know, I enjoyed it, and I know it's not a great movie. I know it's not.
Eric Lee gave
but,
it,
you know,
Eric
I
Lee
liked
gave
it
2.5 stars and said, "This is when indie horror plays it safe."
well, PG-13.
To quote Eric Lee, yep,
that's right.
I'd give it 3. I mean, I liked it.
I'll grant you that half a star, but it's no 4-star movie.
These are gateway doll films.
This is a gateway.
This is a gateway doll. I don't like.
Okay.
I don't know. A past the gateway doll. Right.
Okay, so I'm gonna go from gateway doll.
Deep dive. Here it comes.
To a bridge too far doll movie. And this is one of my favorite movies from last year. This is Puppet Master, The Little Strike.
Oh, The Little Strike, number 13 in the series, right? 13?
Yeah, it's the 13th one, but it really is. It's a standalone.
Yeah.
Although it does take all of the full moon run of Puppet Master did was it gave you a ton of these charismatic, fun little dolls. You had Blade and Pinhead and Tunneler and Kaiser and in this film they're joined by new buddies like Amphibian and Grasshopper, Autogyro, and the offensively non-PC combo of Junior Fuhrer and the Moneylender.
Eric, is this the only Puppet Master you've seen, or are you a Puppet Master fan?
I've seen 3.
Have you seen Puppet Master two more than I've seen? Puppet Master number 10, The Axis of Evil. And was that a precursor to The Littlest Reich?
No, one of the things that The Littlest Reich has done is it turns the Andre Toulon story and inverts it.
Right.
In the series, the main running series, Toulon is a puppet master who was captured by the Nazis and forced to create dolls.
Right.
In this case,
through the use of an Egyptian spell.
Right.
Yes.
In this variant, Toulon is an evil Nazi.
Right.
And creating these dolls as agents
not
of a mass,
not connected to number
mass
10.
Destruction. It is connected by the use of the dolls and Andre Toulon, but they flip it. This was Fangoria's coming out, right?
This was their first time. Started the whole Cinestate thing.
Yeah, and we've talked a bunch about Satanic Panic.
Yeah.
This was the first film that they came out of the gates with, and they went schlock, but injected it with some fantastic acting, featuring Tommy Lennon.
Holy crap! You gave this 4 stars.
I did. I love this movie.
I disagree with you on that, but yeah. I also just recommended The Boy, so I don't know
who I recommended. So Tommy Lennon from Reno 911 is the lead protagonist, and he is he's a collector of these the Toulon dolls, and now this is as if there's been a movie and these are collectible dolls. And so this sort of hits me on many levels because Eric, the collector, Eric, who still has toys, it's like, oh, this might be valuable someday. and he's going to a convention where everybody's bringing their dolls to the convention and maybe selling them or getting them evaluated for collectibles, sort of like Antiques Roadshow kind of a thing. But the time has become just right when the lightning bolt strikes and all the dolls come to life and start killing everybody at the convention. And there's hundreds of dolls
through a lightning strike.
And a curse and, you know, this is
Egyptian spell slash lightning strike.
Right.
And I think that's the exact same plot as Friday the 13th part 8.
No, part 6, that's the one where it strikes the tombstone and he comes out of the grave and starts.
Well, part 8 isn't a lightning strike as much as it is an anchor into an electrical line that's at the bottom of the lake that gives him a jolt. That
electricity and Jason goes.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
But this is so the curse kicks in. And the dolls rise up and kill all their owners.
And it's pretty brutal. They are pretty gross and no holds barred in
there
these
is a,
killings.
There's a pregnant woman who gets killed in a most nasty alien-ish way. There's the toilet sequence, which I've told you about, which is a beheading at the toilet, which is beyond disgusting.
According to you, it is gonzo, gory, a little meta, a little offensive, and a big step up for the venerable franchise.
Yes, it is. This thing, the production values, the acting ability, and the story, it's a notch, several steps up from the traditional Puppet Master. And maybe the reason why I gave it 4 stars was it so exceeded my expectations. I had so much fun. I laughed so much. That, you know, it's like I'll take it. I'll take whatever. It is a movie in terrible taste,
right?
And it's intended to be that way. And this is Fangoria's thing now, right? They're going to push the boundaries of good taste, but they're going to give you higher production values,
right? All right. Well, I am going for my number one. I am going to the very, very, very front of the line, going back to 1989, the one that started it all, Puppet Master. That was a good segue.
Okay.
Good segue.
There
you go.
This is a film, you know, honest to God, I think I just had to let breathe because I had seen so much full moon crap on the video store shelves for so many years. I said, I'm probably never going to see any of the Puppet Master movies, any of the Doll Master movies ever. And I finally, per your glowing review of Puppet Master The Littlest Reich, I said, I'm going all the way back to the beginning and I'm going to check this out. And I checked it out last fall.
Review's up for it.
Is up for it. I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. This is a film that, of course, features Paul LaMatte from American Graffiti fame, Irene Miracle, Matt Rowe, and Catherine O'Reilly as psychics who are plotted against one of their former colleagues. Who is using puppets that have been animated by what I already mentioned earlier, Egyptian curse. This is the film that started it all. This was the progenitor for so much stuff and so much independent horror. I mean, there was obviously independent horror before then, but you know, like, without this film, you wouldn't have Blade, you wouldn't have Jester, you wouldn't have Pinhead, you wouldn't have Tunneler, you wouldn't have Leech Woman, you wouldn't have Shredder Khan, you wouldn't have Genghi,
Shredder Khan.
You wouldn't have any of these characters. And, I mean, they in and of themselves have become maybe not as iconic as, you know, Chucky and Jason and Freddy and whatnot, but they are definitely in that second tier of iconic horror pieces and parts. It's actually, save for the fact that the film, and I think the reason I gave it 3 stars as opposed to going any higher, it's maybe a little unnecessarily complicated given that it is really sort of a killing by numbers sort of film, but it's still really fun. And much like Dolls that I talked about earlier from 1987, which really is the embodiment of a 1987 horror film, this is definitely the embodiment of a 1989 horror film, but more importantly, it is the thing that started it all off and gave us like all the films that I talked about earlier in that long, long list. The interesting
all 15.
Yeah. Well, geez, 500. I didn't keep going. I can keep going. But the interesting thing was that when I was doing when I was kind of looking at these films and looking at some of the history behind them, apparently Charles Band in 2009, which I thought, oh, well, that was just, oh, wait, that was 10 years ago. When 10 years ago, he was wanting to relaunch the original Puppet Master as a 3D film. And, well, it didn't happen.
Well, you know, I think that
he got busy with other crap.
one of the fun things, like with all the doll movies that actually feature animated dolls, is they can be kind of herky jerky, and they can actually be literally puppets.
Right.
Right. You know, and that's and that was part of the thing for all these Puppet Master movies, where how they animated them and all that kind of stuff.
No, that's a really good point. I wanted to bring that up earlier, actually, because when I was watching Dolls, the 1987 film, I was really struck by the fact that they were not using computer animation. They were using green screen. They were using actual like puppeteer work, and they were using stop animation. Right. And I thought, wow, that's so interesting to look back at a film just 30 years ago and to see that that's where they were at with this kind of stuff. Now, I'm sure, and I have not seen the new Chucky reboot from 2019, but I'm sure if I watched the new Chucky reboot from 2019, there would be very little puppeteer work, and there would probably be a ton of digital animation.
Right. I think that there is a physical Chucky doll, but there's a lot of facial animation.
Right.
That now our own Scariest Amy has done the review for the latest Child's Play.
Yes.
And kind of gave it what I sort of suspected, a fair to middling grade.
Two and a half stars. Yeah. So, something like that.
So far, we'll see if Child's Play turns up on any of our lists.
All right, Liz, what do you got for your number one film on the Evil Doll Evil Toy list?
All right, it's not Child's Play. I went a different route here. I went back to 1982. I guess that's my safe space. Yep. And piggybacking off of Eric's recommendation of Coraline when we did our adapted ones.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I am going for our younger fans here, and I'm starting them out with The Dark Crystal because they're Muppets.
Oh, interesting.
I'm counting them as toys.
Interesting.
Okay.
Because the Muppets are puppets, and this is one of my all-time favorite movies. This is a gateway movie for any, you know, kid who is curious about horror movies but not ready to take the plunge yet. And
the Skeksis
so this
were
is
creepy when I was
the
a Skeksis kid.
Yeah. Are creepy. Mm-hmm. So this is Jim Henson and Frank Oz, and they wanted to make, you know, kind of a fantasy, and it was creepier than most people expected what they were going to make. Also, this was their project that they did right before they did Labyrinth in 1986. So that kind of set the tone for, you know, kind of a way they were going. But Dark Crystal, in my opinion, is actually scarier than Labyrinth. Maybe yes. Because there's no
singing and dancing.
Dancing and singing. So this is the story of like two kind of tribes. We have the Gelflings and the Skeksis. The Skeksis are these like bird-like creatures with giant hunchbacks that
vultures.
Kind of, they're vultures and bird-like creatures. Vultures. Thank you. they're gross. They're like decaying. Their voices are creepy. And the Gelflings are like the elves from Lord of the Rings. You know, they have these smooth little faces and gorgeous hair and pointy ears, and they're sweet and they play flutes and they have pets named Fizz Gig, who is just a ball with teeth. And there had been a shard a big crystal that united the kingdom, and the crystal was split and the shard was lost. And the Skeksis and the Gelflings each lost their like chancellor. And so the two groups are coming together to the crystal to like pick a new leader. And whoever puts the shard back in the crystal will be, you know, like the reigning one.
High fantasy.
So it is a very, very dark fantasy. And since it was marketed for kids, it's, you know, and they're Muppets. People were very surprised with how scary it was and how dark it was. But I think it's the perfect gateway for, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 years old.
Maybe even seven years old, depending on how, you know, this is, you know, get them started early. You know,
What? I'm going to, yes, even though inherently I don't think Fizz Gig is scary.
Aww.
Fizz Gig's adorable.
He's not scary. Everybody else is scary.
Yeah. Yes, I have an 8-year-old, and I am going to throw this at the 8-year-old and see where it goes.
Oh,
and we will report back to you.
So maybe that's a good idea.
Hank will have to do a report.
Yeah.
I love it. That's going to be a gateway to, you know, Labyrinth and Legend and all those, like,
exactly,
late or 80s fantasy that went a little bit darker than the parents probably thought it was going to go.
Yeah, so true puppetry there.
Yeah, and
actually,
yeah,
the best, yeah, the best puppetry of all time.
All right, yes, of all you time. Picked. I think Liz picked the most gateway of all of our gateway films tonight.
So, although mine, okay, so mine is another short film that I had talked about.
Puppet Master 7.
This is called Teddy Bears Are for Lovers. Aw, who doesn't love Teddy Bears?
This is a short film?
It's a short film.
Okay, what year are we talking?
This is from 2016, I think.
Okay.
So Colin, Ken Ashton, is wooing Sarah, Mary Oldenburg, in the park, and he gives her a teddy bear, Mr. Snuggles, to keep her company when he's not there. It's a lovely and caring gesture, but little does Sarah know, but Colin is a bit of a Casanova, and he gives all the women he's dated teddy bears. Now, what has happened, of course, is now he's got
Colin's just a pervert, probably.
Colin has broken a lot of hearts, and what has happened is that his ex-girlfriends have taken it out on their teddy bears. And so these teddy bears have been mauled and torn up because Colin's done the women wrong.
Are the teddy bears cursed? Or the teddy bears, can you say?
No, the teddy bears are not cursed, but they're out for vengeance because they arm up, grab kitchen knives, and they sneak into Colin's bedroom one night to gut him because of what Colin did to their beloved owners, because they love the women who've been left in care of him. But again, he gave them, you know, so there's Harold Huggerson and One-Eyed Barry the polar bear stuffy, who's now got one eye because his owner pulled his eye out. There's Dumpy, whose owner pulled his butt off, and there's Stitches, who's the angry ringleader, and they come in and they confront Colin in bed, knives drawn, and it's a lot of fun. It's very silly, and it was actually produced.
What's the runtime on this?
This thing's about 8 minutes.
Okay, all right.
It was executive produced by Joe Dante.
Oh wow!
Who
did Gremlins
and a little movie called Piranha?
Yeah,
and come on, But
the reason why I mentioned Gremlins is because there are some obvious Gremlins moments. Certainly, these things look like Mogwai,
right?
And there's a blender sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, the bears get a couple of pretty good stabs in, on Colin, and you know what but Sarah comes home and. And actually, Sarah's doll, the doll who he gave, is going, come on, give Colin a chance. And the other, and so there's like teddy bear on teddy bear, you know, fisticuffs. It is, it's, and so the if you want to see this, it is the very first short film that I posted on The Scariest Things.
Oh,
wow. Okay.
So go back. So this is
the Wayback Machine.
So do your homework. Yeah. Go back and check it out.
2017. 2017.
So, yeah. I thought you were going to say that all the teddy bears had cameras in them and Colin was just a creeper. That would be you.
That's Teddy Bear 2.
Yeah. Teddy Bear 2. Teddy Bears Are for Lovers 2.
Straight to Pornhub. No.
Yep, I know. With that title, and it is a horror movie. I don't know where we were going.
So, yeah, but actually one of the stories is that they have gotten a director who was he was a cinematographer for, I forget what it was. But from a big, one of the big production houses, they're looking to do a feature film out of this.
Huh.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, because apparently it was so well received. And I think
starring Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. wait a second. Yeah. They've already done that movie.
So anyway, I think we've now captured all of
I think we have.
Our terrible trio. So why don't we go around the table and actually do in review. So Mike, what are your top three?
My top three are 1978's Magic, 1989's Puppet Master, and 1987's Dolls. Liz, what do you got?
Mine are 1982's horror classic Poltergeist, 2016's not so classic, but maybe The Boy.
Soon to be classic.
And back to 1982, The Dark Crystal.
And so Eric,
I have the crazy fun short film Finley from 2019. I have Puppet Master: The Littlest Reich from 2018. The Gonzo Splatterfest with more blood than you can possibly
four issue star. Up. Four star Gonzo Splatterfest.
I stand by that rating. And then 2016's Teddy Bears Are for Lovers. And I know I don't count on, I may have to double check the date on that, but check out the website.
All right. I'm going to take us out.
Oh, are we going to do any grave digging?
Yes.
I don't think, no, we're not doing grave digging tonight. We got to move. We got to go. Right. We got to get going. The tagline from the 1978 magic classic, Abracadabra. I sit on his knee. Presto changeo, and now he is me. Hocus pocus, oh. We take her to bed. Magic is fun. We're dead.
Nice.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, and that yeah, if you see that trailer, woo boy, that trailer is still creepy as hell.
I think magic is probably the one for our listeners that's probably the real lost gem that needs to get checked out.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see it too.
Sir Richard Attenborough, go check it out now.